Here we are again. My name is Jeffrey Davis, and this is Radio Entrepreneurs. This week, being featured by the law firm of Davis Mom D'Augustine, PC, excuse me. And that means my co-host is the incomparable Pat Clendenin.
Jeffrey, great to have you here again at our offices.
Thank you very much.
This is our second spot working together, and we're just getting started. So thank you for being here.
I think it's great. And, you know, I always say it, you know, the one thing about Davis Mom is that, you know, the second you walk in the door, you know it's a law firm.
It is. Yeah. It is a law firm.
You would never say this is a software company.
It is a law firm, and there are real lawyers that work here.
And our next guest, someone I know you know very well, and he's going to talk to us a lot about M&A and the proper role of M&A, is Charlie Lax from Grand Banks Capital. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for having me this morning.
Thank you. Charlie, before we get into it, you want to just give us a little bit of your background so our listeners understand how qualified you are to discuss this topic?
Well, I've been in venture capital for about 27 years. Helped start SoftBank's venture capital operation in the United States. And in 2000, we spun out and created Grand Banks Capital based in the Boston area here. We're primarily focused on software companies. We do some hardware. But we're early stage venture capitalists. We get into the companies literally when the companies are first starting to talk to customers. We do happen to have a cadre of entrepreneurs that come back to us, serial entrepreneurs, and we actually start companies in our offices. One such company, SilverRail Technologies, we just sold to Expedia last month. And that was a company that we started in our offices some time ago.
Hey, so Charlie, from our listeners' perspective, kind of explain Grand Banks' approach to venture capital and working with early stage companies and how that approach may differ from other venture capital organizations out there.
Because you've had quite a degree of success.
Well, one of the things that we do, we like to party with other investors. So we generally work with a multitude of other venture capital firms, syndicate our deals. We lead all of our deals when we do them. We're primarily a Series A investor. But when we're looking at opportunities with entrepreneurs and we're targeting specific segments to participate in, we're always looking at where the company ultimately will exit. You generally will know of a company as IPO material within the first 20, 24 months of gestation as you're building it. And that's certainly a hope if you're going to scale a company. It's got to be about a $100 million run rate, and you're looking at about $1 billion market valuation if you're looking at public markets today. But that's, you know, if it's that's 80-20 rule, that's really 95-5. Most of our companies exit through a merger and acquisition with a large company, usually a multinational, international company. And we actually write executive investment memorandums prior to our investments in companies, looking at building a pathway to liquidity for those companies and figuring out who the likely acquirers may be. And one of the things that we really work hard at is making sure that the entrepreneurs and the board investors are in alignment with regard to the gestation period of these companies and making sure that the companies are introduced properly to prospective acquirers. There's an old adage that a lot of people say that companies are bought, not sold. And I've been doing this for 27 years, and I can say 100% of the time, companies are sold, not bought.
You know, that there's a theme for me as I'm listening to you, and that is you start with the end in mind, and you make sure that you have your goals clear and where this is going to end up versus just working a process.
Yeah, well, we don't get involved with companies we can't help. We're not drive-by venture capitalists. We get involved not at the board level, but we help a lot of the companies, their first set of customers coming out of our Rolodexes. And when we're thinking about these companies, we're thinking about how they could be product lines or product sets in larger corporations. And oftentimes, it's a board-level introduction that's made to a prospective acquirer. I mentioned SilverRail Technologies, which was just acquired to Expedia. Expedia was at the table before we actually created SilverRail Technologies. They wanted to co-invest with us in our Series A. We decided that it made better sense to syndicate that to other venture capital firms, and we did that with Sutter Hill. And we basically kept working with companies like Expedia, and they were so on the outside looking in, but knew about the company intimately from the get-go.
Charlie, some of the materials you provided to us in advance were really interesting graphically. You have the fishing boat and fishing in the waters, but also what struck me was the importance of people and how an organization like yours can really position a company to grow and also position a company to exit by introducing the right people to the company that you're investing in. Can you explain how you go about that process?
A really good example is a company we exited in June of 2012, a company called Vela Systems, we sold to Autodesk. And the former CEO of Autodesk, just retired in February, said this is the best acquisition they ever made. So we're delighted that they've been able to make that successful. A lot of times acquirers destroy the companies they buy, and sometimes in record time. When we looked at this opportunity, the entrepreneur, the CEO opportunity came to us through a CEO that wanted to run this company because he had met two entrepreneurs, Adam Omansky and Josh Kanner. And Tim Curran brought the deal to us, and we immediately thought of Elliot Katzman over at Commonwealth Capital, because Elliot had been CFO of a company that ultimately sold to Dassault Systèmes. And he brought with him, in the participation of the investment with us, his old CEO, John Hirschtick, who was CEO of that company. And John happened to be Senior Vice President of Dassault Systèmes. So at the get-go, we had a guy who, co-investor, who knew the market really well. We brought on an independent director, entrepreneur, that was a Senior Vice President of a prospective acquirer. And we helped start building the business and growing it. Ultimately, we brought in Autodesk as a Series B investor and kept them at arm's length. Just as an observer, they weren't on the board. And so all along, we had two prospective acquirers, one inside the tent and one outside the tent. John Hirschtick, who was a Senior Vice President of Dassault Systèmes, they were looking at the construction industry and looking at potentially acquiring Vela Systèmes. And then Autodesk, which was already a 19% owner of the company as a result of their Series B investment. And so it was at the right time that we grew the business, that we both had both companies interested in the company, and we were able to sell Vela Systèmes to Autodesk for strategic value. It was a very, very significant sale to Autodesk, and as I mentioned, Autodesk was very, very happy with the acquisition.
You know, again, I think Pat's correct about your material. Can you explain to our listeners what you call as the Downton Abbey effect?
Oh, well, I don't know how many of your listeners have watched
not the PBS version.
Well, the PBS show, which is a terrific show, and a lot of people really enjoy watching it. In the turn of the century, you had this lord that basically had three eligible, very attractive daughters, and one married off the chauffeur, one married off a cousin. And the other one was jilted at the altar. And the Downton Abbey effect was that, you know, here we had a lord, big landowner, Eton college graduate. And this was during a time when it was really his responsibility to make sure that the right suitors were in front of his daughters. And if you watch the series, he did an incredibly bad job at his job of being dad and father. And what he should have done was called all of his Eton's college buddies, invite them over for monthly parties at his incredible castle, and introduce them to his daughters. And I'm sure at some point one of these young sons would have stuck. And that would have been the right thing to do at the time for a father, to basically introduce the right set of men to his daughters. So the point that I'm making here is that you don't wait for somebody to knock on your door, the idea that companies are bought, not sold. You actually go out into the marketplace, talk to companies, talk about business partnerships, talk about prospective investments, get the acquirer to know about your company. I've been doing this for 27 years, and I've yet to have somebody knock on our door that we haven't spoken to before, we haven't made an introduction, we haven't visited at a conference, we haven't had breakfast with somebody or made an introduction through a third party like an investment banker. Nobody knocks on your door and says, what a cute house you have, I'd like to buy it. Cute portfolio company, we'd like to buy it. You have to actually go out and make sure that the company is aware of your company. The worst thing that can happen in the world to a venture capitalist is to work really hard, build a great company, and watch the competitor being sold to the prospective acquirer, because they never made the introduction to the prospective acquirer. The acquirer never even knew about their company because they weren't doing their job as a board member, as an investor, in making sure that the company was in the pathway of liquidity with that prospective acquirer.
And in looking at the technology that you have in Vela or any one of your other investments over the years, are you looking at one particular industry? Are you looking at different industries? Are you trying to maximize the strategic value? As you say, you're trying to drive profitability, obviously, but not every early-stage company is profitable.
Well, profitability is actually not a word I use often. My partner likes to use it because he actually ran a very profitable mainframe software company years ago. But we're trying to drive customer demand. And whether you're looking at a company in the advertising arena where you're basically trying to get people to view your product, the eyeball effect, or you're trying to create revenue top line. But we're not selling our companies on an EBITDA basis. That's a private equity model. We're selling our companies based on strategic value of the technology.
Right.
We aggressively look at any opportunities where we can patent the technology, because that really gives you a leg up in the marketplace, huge leg up in the marketplace. And we're looking at making sure that the customer validation is there in the marketplace. I've got companies that I've sold with for substantial strategic value with no revenue, with a couple million dollars in revenue and $10 million in revenue. So you don't have to have a $20 million, $50 million revenue company to get real strategic value in the marketplace, as long as you're able to show real customer traction, use of the product, and that the technology is defensible.
Excellent. Very good. You made me think of so many things. I liked listening to you. Thank you to my partner here for asking some of these questions. If somebody wants to find you and Grand Banks Capital, how would they do that?
Well, the easiest way is just to do a search on the net for grandbankscapital.com. We're located in Needham, Massachusetts, and just give us a call. Emails are great, but when you get 300 emails a day, it's better to pick up the phone and use your index finger and call.
Right. Thanks for being on the show today. Great.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Great reputation, and the firm has a great reputation. So do you. Thanks. We appreciate it. I want to thank also our friend Pat Clendenin, who's my co-host, for being here with me and spelling me on some of the questions. My name is Jeffrey Davis. We're going to take a break. Remind everybody, this is Radio Entrepreneur.